Muses of Mythology is a spoiler-heavy podcast.
That's an understatement.
We're going to discuss not just the events of this book, but the Ridenverse as a whole, and really anything that we feel is relevant. You can find full spoiler warnings in the show notes. All right, DJ, now that you've had some time, what do you think is going to happen in Avatar: Way of Water? What would you like to have happen?
I'd like the plot of Moana to happen in the Avatar.
It's just a Moana movie. As you said, the first one was just Pocahontas.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Let's just have this one be the better Pocahontas, a.k.a. Moana.
Exactly. Okay, now hold on a second.
Welcome to Muses of Mythology, a podcast where we explore how ancient myths become modern pop culture. This week, we continue our journey through Rick Riordan's Percy Jackson and the Olympians with Story 45, Nymphs. I'm your co-host and podcasting muse, Darian Smart. Joining me is my co-host and brother, DJ.
How's everybody doing today? I am Muse of the Fae. They're tricky creatures.
Very tricky. So tricky that they are sneaking into an episode that is, in fact, about nymphs.
I know, right? Crazy.
Classic. All right, well, before we get started, let's get inspired and see what's going on in the theater. Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday Woo. To us.
Yay.
Happy birthday, dear podcast. Happy birthday to us.
It's our birthday month, everybody.
It's our birthday month.
What day did our birthday actually happen? Was it October 13th?
October 13th. Yep, so this coming week.
I know. We're very excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, this whole month we want to celebrate with you, our listeners. You probably noticed you had an extra episode here in the main feed last week with us unlocking one of our Bunker 9 bonus episodes.
I know. That episode was the twisted tail episode of the Hercules book, Go the Distance.
It was the first twisted tail we ever did.
It was the first one, and it was great. I liked it a lot.
Awesome. Yeah, and it's just, we wouldn't be here celebrating our second anniversary without y'all, so we wanted to give all of our listeners some presents. You can expect another bonus episode to be unlocked on...
Not a bonus episode.
It's a bonus episode that is being unlocked.
It's a Remith episode.
Oh, we don't call these... Oh, you and I have a different classification. It's true. This is... Well, they're still bonus episodes.
Well, you called the Bunker 9 at the start bonus episodes, yeah. And then Remith episodes.
This is fair. So, yes, you have a Remith
episode. It's an extra episode that you're going to get.
Extra special tier in which we... This is the episodes we do where we talk about retellings outside of the Percy Jackson series.
Yes.
And we won't spoil which one you're getting.
Yep.
Check the feed next week.
And if you guys like them, we got a lot on our Patreon.
We do.
We've done one every month. We've been kind of slacking. Very sorry. But we've done one.
There is one for every month. There is one for every month.
Like these people aren't going to notice the fact that there were suddenly three in a row.
It doesn't
all in October.
It doesn't matter. There is one for every month. We fulfill our promise.
Yep.
Eventually. Yes. So that is what's going on. Also over on the Patreon, our wonderful patrons are getting another extra episode in which we, DJ and I, went to see Avatar in theaters in 3D.
Yeah.
A thing I will never do again.
She'll never do again. I might.
You might.
Used to say.
But you'll hear our full conversation. That is actually dropping on our anniversary.
Full conversation. We capped ourselves because I had to work that night.
Okay. Our full recorded conversation is coming out on the anniversary of our birthday. On the 13th, that is going to all patrons. So if you've been on the fence about, I talk about it, I don't know, you could drop a dollar, listen to all of the delightful blooper bonus content, and also get that episode when it drops. If you wanted to up it, you get $5, and that means you're going to get Muses of Mythology content every single week.
Yep.
On the main feed and over on the
Patreon. That's the tier that you get our Bunker Nines.
Mm-hmm. And if you're like, I really love the work they do, higher tiers get you extra content, the Remith episodes, thank yous, episode topics of your choosing. There's a whole thing over on Patreon, patreon.com/Muses of Mythology.
Yep.
You can check it out there. We aren't saying you should give us a present because it's our birthday.
But it'd be nice.
If you've been thinking about it, the timing would be super nice.
It would be great.
Another reason why maybe perhaps you would like to join our team over on Patreon is that you will be part of the monthly Patreon donation process. Every month, we donate $1 for every patron we have over on Patreon to an organization aiming to do a net positive in the world.
Yep. This month's organization is Best the Book Bus.
Best the Book Bus instills a love of reading in asset-limited communities by supplying high-quality books to children, caregivers, and educators, and making the joy of book ownership a reality. Best the Book Bus is celebrating its 20th year on October 14th. And as of September, they have given away 1 million books.
Man, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. This month, we have 8 patrons, so we're going to be donating an additional $20, mm-hmm. rounding up to $28.
Thank you so much for all of our patrons for making these donations possible. Now, back to the show. All right, DJ, here we are.
Here we are.
Part two of what was supposed to be a one-part episode, but...
But Satyrs was a lot more than we were expecting.
Satyrs was a lot more than we were expecting. And honestly, good, because it means we can really dig into nymphs, which I feel would have gotten very skimmed had we actually combined these two topics.
Yes.
I think... Well, before we get into all of that, DJ?
Yep.
You know what's up. What do you remember about nymphs for the Percy Jackson series?
Grover telling Percy about the nymph bet.
The what?
The nymph bet, where if Satyr catches a nymph, they get a kiss.
It's not called the nymph bet,
it's
though.
It's not, but that's what I was just calling it.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I'm like, no, you're good. You're good. I just... No, you're right. That's a thing that's like this game that satyrs and nymphs play. But like, no, you just go on. No, go on.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, you know, I don't know. They're not super, like we see nymphs every now and again. You know, we saw the nymph, the river nymph mm-hmm. in Battle of the Labyrinth. We see Juniper. Mm-hmm. Later on, we get a little more. But we don't ever really truly interact with them too much. We have the ocean nymph in the first one. Oh, it's an ocean nymph, right?
She's an ocean nymph or a river nymph? The one that Percy sees and initially thinks she looks like his mom, but she's delivering a message to him.
Yeah. There's not a lot going on with them, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. But they show up, you know, and be useful.
I think that's actually, you just hit the nail on the head. They exist in the books to be useful to the demigods.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah. I want to real quick on the, just elaborate briefly on the nymph bet, which the more I say it, the more I do love it, DJ. I find it very charming, actually. That does play into the stories of satyrs that we kind of touched on in the last episode. Satyrs chasing nymphs.
Yeah.
Definitely in the stories of antiquity. The nymphs weren't exactly a fan of this. This was not a fun game for the nymphs. This was harassment and oftentimes assault.
Yeah.
In the Percy Jackson books, I think it is very fair to establish that this is a sort of cultural game. And I don't know if we're like, I don't really want to get super into that, but I think it is important to distinguish, like, this is being presented as something that the nymphs enjoy too.
Yeah.
Like this kind of back and forth. And that's it. That's all I felt like really saying on that one.
Yeah.
That's really, I think in this one it's like, and this one is not great. This is tying into the idea of like satyrs and nymphs. We actually see it in her fucking Hercules. We meet Phil and he is chasing nymphs. And
yeah.
They transform into the trees and all the nature-y shit. And that's a fun scene to watch, but also creepy.
Yeah.
Also creepy.
Yeah.
But yeah. But I think the most important thing from what you said, DJ, is, as you said, they exist to be useful, which is kind of a bummer.
A little bit. Just a touch.
And I think you maybe we see that in a lot of nymph stories we'll get to later. But these nature spirits is what I originally wrote down on this episode topic. Really do just exist to be useful. The nymphs are part of like the staff at Camp Half-Blood. Essentially,
yeah.
They talk about the nymphs carrying trays and stuff in the dining pavilion, or they are like playing in. There's like Percy talks about seeing like the nymphs in the lake and stuff, like teasing and things like that. I think at this point, is Juniper the only nymph with a name?
I think the ocean nymph had a name in the first book.
Did she have a name? Or did she have like, oh, she is a like an Oshiad or a Nereid?
I'm pretty sure she had a name.
Okay, hold on.
Being as she was also able to go pretty far from the sea and being in St. Louis, you know?
Yeah, hold
on. It'd be hard to be that strong of an imp without a name.
I mean, true. Hold on, Percy. I don't think so.
No?
No. I think she mentions that she is a nymph, or maybe she's like a class of nymph. But I'm on the page for nymphs on the Riordan Wiki. And the only named nymphs are Juniper and Melly.
That's fucking goofy.
No, it's okay.
And I'm talking about the knowledge of that wiki right there. Because first of all, Joshua. Right.
That's a good point. We do get a lot more nymphs. We do get a lot more named nymphs.
And it's like, and then the seven, those seven powerful nymphs. I don't remember their names, but I know they had names.
The Silver Wives?
Yeah. Pretty sure they had names.
No, you're true, true. I mean, the wiki I'm only basing off of like the gallery where it's showing art, and there was only two. No, you're right. It doesn't. That is interesting how the wiki, because if you go to anything else, like it'll have a listing of like notable characters of XYZ. You're right. You're right. This is a, well, looks like I have another podcast in which yet another wiki is my enemy.
There you go.
God damn it. It's becoming my brand. All right. Well, here it is.
Here it is.
So I don't remember that nymph having a name though. I think she has a title, but I don't think we like her name is like
maybe not then.
Because here's why I think that. Because another very notable nymph in this book, as you mentioned, DJ, is the
river nymph.
The river nymph we see on the.
She doesn't have a name either.
No, here. Oh my god, dude. Let me.
Okay. Do you have a name in the Hercules myth?
No.
That's probably why she doesn't have a name here.
You make a good point. I still hate it. So it's the, was it the triple R or the triple D ranch?
I think it was triple D ranch.
Yeah. So yeah, Percy goes up. He's, cause it's, this is the, right, cause it's the Hercules myth, as we talked about when we had Robert on the show. Oh, so long ago now it feels, doesn't it? Doesn't it feel so long ago? It's one of the trials of Hercules. He's got to clean the stables of these flesh-eating horses.
Yep.
And its stables are ratchet, so he just redirects the river to clean it all out. So Percy's like, okay, well, I'll do that. I know this story. I know the game. When I got to the river, I found a girl waiting for me. She was wearing jeans and a green t-shirt, and her long brown hair was braided with river grass. She had a stern look on her face. Her arms were crossed. Oh, no, you don't, she said. I stared at her. Are you a naiad? Of course. But you speak English, and you're out of the water. What, you don't think we can act human if we want to? I never thought about that. I felt kind of stupid, though, because I'd seen plenty of naiads at camp, and they'd never done more than giggle and wave at me from the bottom of the canoe lake. Look, I just came to ask. I know who you are, and I know what you want. And the answer is no. I'm not going to have my river used to clean out that filthy stable. He's like, but, oh, save it, sea boy. You ocean god types always think you're so much more important than a little river, don't you? Well, let me tell you, this naiad isn't going to get pushed around just because your daddy is Poseidon. This is freshwater territory, mister. And I did not intend to read this for this long.
No.
This keeps going. But they basically, the whole passage, Percy even, she's like, talks about how, like, you know, it ruins her ecosystem. All of her fish are going to die. She'll be sick for years.
Yep.
And Percy's like, my friends are in danger. She's like, that's too bad. And I'm not going to let you ruin my river. She looked like she was ready for a fight. Her fists were balled, but I thought I heard a little quiver in her voice. Suddenly I realized that despite her angry attitude, she was afraid of me. She probably thought I was going to fight her for control of the river, and she was worried she would lose.
She would lose.
She would lose.
First
absolutely.
Of all, she would lose. Yeah.
She's the son of the sea god, and she is a naiad.
Yeah.
So Percy immediately backs down. He's like, hey, you win. I'm not going to fight you. It's your river. So then she's the one that gives him a little bit of like, hey, here's an anime hero training montage moment. Think about
the
it.
The ocean's inside you, the ocean's bro. Inside
you. Come look at these little stones. This was all once water. Figure it out. And then Percy does a power level up. And we do love to see it.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
But in this whole thing, Percy even thinks about how like she reminds her of Rachel Elizabeth Dare punching him with words. And just, yeah. But the whole time, she doesn't get a name.
Doesn't really get the chance to name herself, though.
Yeah, but I mean, usually...
She's just mad.
I mean, she's just mad, yeah. But I mean, she could definitely like have a name where she's like, oh no, this is, I'm X and this is my river.
Yeah.
I think you're right though.
I think she just didn't have an original name.
I think that's right. Yeah, I think you're spot and on.
As much as we do like Rick, he doesn't typically name characters or like change the name or rename or whatever, like when they show up originally in myths, mm-hmm. right? He'll create his own characters.
Zoe Nightshade, my OC, Do Not Steal.
Zoe Nightshade, who, you know, that's the only character I can think that...
It's just whole cloth.
Is whole cloth and predates back to the ancient mm-hmm. Greek times yeah. and this was supposedly in the myth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, one of the... That's also the a nymph.
Zoe Nightshade, also a nymph, but also a titaness, you know.
Well, okay, we'll get to that. But yeah, so here's the thing. And this, I think, has to do... The fact that this nymph doesn't have a name, the fact that the nymphs really, of all kinds, just exist to be useful. Like, even her, this river nymph, this nameless nymph, she's not just an obstacle telling Percy he can't just use the river. She also is useful in that she's... gives Percy some information that helps him going on. Like anytime we encounter a nymph, they are.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Even Juniper in this book, who's like Grover's girlfriend and she's so worried about him. Avi, they're very cute together, but she also is useful in that she reveals that she saw Luke poking around the boulders before he left camp where they find the entrance to the labyrinth.
Yeah.
Which is like, not like bad. It's like character stuff. I'm not saying this is bad. Yeah. But I'm just like, yeah. This is like kind of it. And it kind of goes to what I am calling the depowering of nymphs.
Depowering?
Because DJ, nymphs were goddesses.
Yeah.
They were minor goddesses, yes. They were, you know, a little, they weren't like, you know, an Artemis type or a Demeter type nature goddess, but they were at one point in time considered like minor deities in their own right, like as a part of that like divine ecosystem of nature. We talked about it last time, but that quote from Edith Hamilton regarding like this brief mention of satyrs, right, where they were, or like, you know, gods, the ugly gods. She notes that the goddesses of the woodland were all lovely maiden forms, the Oreads, nymphs of the mountains, the Dryads, sometimes called Hamadryads, nymph of the trees, whose lives in each case was bound up in that of her tree. She only cites two here, but they're goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just not something you see. And Encyclopedia Britannica describes nymphs as any large class of inferior female divinities, which...
I don't know if divinity is what classifies you as a god and goddess, though.
Divinity.
Angels aren't gods, but they're still divine.
That's a good point. But, I mean, okay, just talking about like that, but you would not consider Juniper divinity.
I mean, no, right? But I wouldn't consider Percy divinity.
No, and Percy's not. Because even the demigods, we don't consider them divinity. They're not. But the nymphs at one point, this is not saying thing bad, just thing exist.
Yeah.
But the nymphs, and this is not just Rick Riordan's work. This is honestly any time I can think of a nymph in pop culture, which we'll talk about.
I could also say it could be because the watering down of divinity, right? As we get to see with Octavian and his watering down of his, you know, in tuneness with Apollo's power.
Interesting, interesting. I was thinking more where you're going to go with that is like the watering down of nature as an inherent power or value.
Oh, no, no, no. Even in these stories, we see that nature is still super strong, and I don't think nature's ever weak in any point in time. We get to see what's going on in Florida. That's all fucking nature.
Well, exactly. It is nature. But I think I would say that like we as we're out of order, we usually don't get to this part of the podcast until later, but I'm here for it. As this concept of kind of like Western European civilization throughout history, it became a point of pride and this like indicator of success and civility to be away from nature, to be unassociated with nature or the primal. And you see this comes in like waves in like art and literature and science and stuff, but to believe in like, oh, the inherent like power of nature or things like that. Like, oh, an artist is inspired by it. Like, but scientists are, or like, oh, to be like in touch with that is to not be high enough or not to be in touch with your true like human soul and what makes man a man and that kind of thing. I would say in time, as we've progressed, progressed as we have seen time go on and the way this culture that we're pulling a lot of these stories from have the relationship we have with nature as a concept is very, very different.
Yeah.
Ergo, it no longer feels like it has this same kind of power and reverence.
Well, different cultures have different belief for what kind of goes on.
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like the depowering of nymphs I propose comes from the fact that we no longer have that. So in the nymph, who is the spirit of the tree, the river, the mountain, the forest, she is beautiful and she is inspiring and she is like giving, but she is not a goddess to be feared or revered.
Yeah, that could also be it.
Yeah.
You know?
So that's what I have come from, because it's like of reading about it, it's like, oh, these were goddesses. They were goddesses and we don't treat them like goddesses, even minor goddesses.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah. Again, there's a lot of things that could go into it as to why, right?
Because there were, DJ, oh my God, just so many nymphs, just so many classifications of nymphs, just every single facet. And I think it would, I have them written down, I've got tons of notes. I don't think it'll be interesting for me just to name off all of these ones, but perhaps a couple fun details I've learned. The first one being dryads.
Yeah, classic.
Dryads, yes. Tree nymphs, right? As I said before. It is, I think, speculated is the appropriate word, that originally dryads were just the spirits of oak trees, because dris is either it is the word or it's a root of the ancient Greek word for oak.
Mm-hmm.
But in time, it just became the word you would use for all tree spirits. I thought that was interesting.
I would imagine it's because like oak trees are probably pretty common in Greece, right? Like, I don't know the fauna of ancient Greece or even modern Greece, but oak is still pretty like common just here in America.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you they had fresh water, and then they had trees and forests, and then they had meadows and marshes.
Yep.
And then they had mountains.
Yep.
And then sea.
Yep.
And these are just the overall arches of the nymphs. I'm not even going down and naming the type. But we know they had a lot of like, that's actually, you can learn a lot of like, so what's the nature look like here? But she's like, well, here's all the types of nymphs they had. There's a specific nymph, the Limonades. And they were the nymphs of flowery water meadows. Specifically. Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
But they never have to worry about staying hydrated.
It's great.
They were, oh my God, oh, I know this one, actually. So, sorry, my friend Melissa was talking about how, associated with Demeter and bees, and how the Melissae were nymphs of honeybees.
Nice.
It's very good. Did you want to know, is there any like nature thing that you're like, was there a nymph for this?
No, not particularly.
Oh, well, I know. This game? Do you know? Just, no, name something. Come on. Play okay. Play the game.
Was there a nymph for like fire?
No. Interesting. There's not.
Do you think Greece had wildfires?
Oh, totally. There's wildfires. They would have had wildfires. But I would wonder if the destructive nature of, because I view fire as being natural. But the destructive nature of it perhaps doesn't align with the nymph, because it destroys a grove.
It destroys nymphs rather than.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
So I do wonder what but they had.
Probably viewed as like divine punishment for the nymphs. Maybe the nymphs pissed off a god or something like that.
Something,
right?
Yeah. But there were sky and star nymphs.
Hell yeah. What's the star nymph?
So there were the Asteri, were nymphs of the stars, and most of them were daughters of the Titan. Atlas.
Classic.
We've met some of them. Yeah. The Pleiades. The
that Hyades. We yeah. have.
There was the Nymphs of Sunset, the Hesperides. They were
Do you think some of the Nymphs were pissed off that they had to make their sister in the sky?
You know, yeah. That is interesting. That is interesting. If they were like, yes, no, I hadn't thought about that, that these nymphs are like nymphs of stars. And then...
Because it's like, we know Artemis, that they can turn back into their tree or go back to their tree to heal or sleep or whatever it is, right? Do you think they can go back to their star?
That's so interesting. No, that is so interesting. Oh, and I would love for you to
What happens to if like the nymph themselves like die? Does the star disappear?
You know, I don't know. It is interesting.
Or if the like, star disappears, does the nymph die?
You're throwing a lot of questions. I'm not prepared. I think. So we know if, like, just using the dryads, like juniper as an example, if the tree is killed, the nymph dies.
Yep.
So what happens to, and we obviously see, like, with the river nymph that Percy talks to, she talks about how, like, if Percy were to use her river to go through, clean the stables, it will make her sick. It will pollute her river. So they are intrinsically linked. She is clearly thousands of years old. She's very, very old. Yeah,
she's very old.
So we,
but she also happened to be, where's the Triple R Ranch? Or Triple D Ranch? Where is that located, actually? I think
it's in Texas now.
So that river moved to Texas?
Yes, and Olympus is above the Empire State.
That's a different situation.
I don't think it is.
All right. Mount Olympus was an idea and a concept of a place where where the gods lived at the top of a mountain that you could conceivably climb, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So it's obvious that this idea and concept would move. Mm-hmm. This is an actual fucking river that existed in Greece that you could, again, probably visit.
You know, you make a good point. But as you pointed out, DJ, I suppose we'd have to go back and check the sources, but if the river had no name in the myth, then it was perhaps not a river you could actually visit. Because I would actually think she would only have a name if she was named the river.
I guess.
Because I imagine the rivers are named after the nymphs would maybe get their names from the rivers and things like that. So can I tell you about the thing I found that I was super interested in, but I did not know
also,
before.
Sorry, just one more thing.
Yep.
We know when a satyr dies, the comeback is like a plant.
Sometimes, yeah. Usually, as we've seen, it prime example is plant, but I think Grover has implied that they could come back as other nature things.
Yeah. If they come back as a plant, does a nymph spawn from that plant too?
Here's the thing. I'm pretty sure, with very little evidence to support this, that in the Percy Jackson books, nymphs and satyrs are the same species.
Because it's like, I mean, we see, clearly they're, I don't know, genetically, they can reproduce. They're genetically compatible. Mm-hmm. And when it's a boy...
And their offspring can reproduce.
Yeah. And when it's a... At the very least, we know that if it's a boy, it's a satyr.
Yeah, males are satyr.
Can it be a girl? Or do they just wait for a satyr to die to become a girl?
It's so wild. Okay. Now we're going to talk about Heroes of Olympus for a brief second. We mentioned Millie earlier. She's a cloud nymph. She's an Ore. I really like Millie.
Dude, Millie's great, and so is Coach Hedge.
Coach Hedge is the best. And they have a kid.
I love the little guy.
What's his name? Do you remember? I was really hoping you'd spit it out for me. So they have a kid, and it's a little boy, satyr. And the only satyrs we've met have been – we haven't met any lady satyrs. In the Ryan books, but we have, in Trials of Apollo, we do meet Joshua Tree, who is a gentleman dryad, a gentleman
nymph. Chuck Hedge.
Baby Chuck Hedge. And Apollo even mentions how that is rare. And that does throw, it's okay. Here's the thing about donkeys and horses and mules. A horse and a donkey can reproduce and it creates a mule.
Yeah.
But the mule cannot reproduce.
Okay.
They're not the same species. That is how you determine whether something is the same species ultimately, if it can reproduce and if it's offspring. Just fucking biology. And also what I learned from, I can recall from freshman biology, gang. So forgive me if I'm missing some new ones. The fact that nymphs.
Can't ligers reproduce?
No.
No?
No, they can't.
Can't reproduce with each other?
No.
Okay.
I cannot. I'm pretty sure. Let me double check.
Because we got like liger sanctuaries, right? That have a lot of ligers.
Yeah, but I think...
And ligers are only ever born in captivity.
Yeah. Okay, okay. So in 1943, a liger successfully mated with a lion. And a female cub, though of delicate health, was raised to adulthood. And then in 2012... But this is very, very unusual.
Okay, so it's rare.
Yeah.
It was the exception, not the rule. Okay.
Yes. So usually, so yeah, not usually. And these, and also the both cases that are documented, the hybrid species mated with like prime species and not another liger.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be different too. But mules, okay, so basically mules can't reproduce. So that's how we know they're different species. But the offspring can of nymphs and satyrs. Therefore, they must be the same species, manifesting in two different ways. But it's also
like gods and humans can reproduce, and then demigods can reproduce with humans.
But they have no DNA, so it doesn't count. But gods have no DNA, so it doesn't count. Yeah,
but we're bringing science into this magic bullshit.
No, I'm trying to define. I'm taking a page from Owen's book and just trying to figure out how this all works.
No, yeah, I get it.
You brought us here, Mr. Does the Star Die?
Well, yeah, that's an entirely different question too. Hey, are they the same?
No, we're still talking about life and death and reproduction. How do new dryads be born? Is it the death of a satyr? Because that's going to bum you up. But that could only be dryads. That couldn't be like a sea or a star or anything else. Like the star.
I mean, stars show up, right? Stars are created just constantly.
Yeah.
And so it's, do they... In places with heavy light pollution, are they weaker or do they just not go?
I think they would absolutely be weaker if they cannot connect with their star. Because like Juniper talked about, she can't go far away from her tree and stuff, right? So it has to be...
Visible somehow?
Visible. So you wouldn't see a lot in...
Man, those ones that are like far away and we unlike like red dwarf stars must be fucking bummed out. They can't really go anywhere.
Probably. Yeah, yeah.
The people connected to like the Big Dipper be like, dude, I'm the fucking shit.
You know, and all the other star names hate that guy. Yeah. Just so obnoxious. Yeah, we get it. I can go
almost wherever.
We get it. Your star's super bright. Good for you. You did nothing to earn that. Or maybe they did. I don't know. I don't know the rules. Who's to say? We could say right now. They work really hard for it.
Or they lucked out and managed to become part of a constellation.
Constellations too. Yeah, so I'd like to talk about the two nymphs that I learned about that I didn't know about, that I'm super into now, delighted to know exist. Underworld nymphs.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. So the specific...
I guess technically the River of Styx is just a very strong nymph.
Right.
Pretty sure it's brought up at some point in time in like some story that I read that the River Styx, that goddess is just a fucking powerful ass nymph.
Yeah, you would just, it's interesting because I've read we meet Styx, the goddess Styx in the books.
Yeah.
And so it is interesting, like what makes her a goddess? But another river, but this river nymph from the Percy Jackson one isn't. And is it perhaps because people still, or at least because of worship the Styx and put value in it,
that might be the case, right? Because we know that gods get their power, divinity, strength from worship, as we saw with Nero and the triumvirate, right? Yeah. They were getting their power from a worshiping, from being worshipped, all Hold these on fucking one people.
Thank you for listening to Muse of Mythology. We were exploring ancient myths, but how modern pop culture while reading Rick Riordan's Trials of Apollo.
I know, right? Yeah. And so we know that like gods do get like some amount of power from being worshipped. So it could be and we know that the, he's still in Trials of Apollo, the Hidden Grove, right? The Hidden Oracle, we find that. And I would imagine that like if there was a nymph for that, that nymph would also be pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
It could also, again, come back to the fact that it's like, well, these nymphs have been, I don't know, they could be new, they could be old, and I'd imagine new nymphs aren't nearly as strong as River of Styx that have been around for thousands of years.
Yeah, here's a question. Why does the Grove of Dodonia not have nymphs?
I don't know.
What makes these psychic fucking trees not have nymphs, but like juniper
maybe the nymphs just never come out of their tree, and that's why the grove is constantly talking and psychic, and it's and if they leave their trees, they become disconnected from that oracle.
You know, that's a really good point, DJ. I like that a whole lot. Yeah, so underworld nymphs. No, I just think it's really interesting because I never thought about it before. But so underworld nymphs are called the Lampanese. And they are torch-bearing nymphs of the underworld. And just, let me, just the aesthetic.
Give me the sleepy nymph of the river. Give me the sleepy GF nymph of the river of Lethe, all right? Yeah. Give me that nymph.
Oh, super, just sleepy. So good. Okay, but so specifically these nymphs, they formed the train of the goddesses Persephone and Hecate. And many of them are described as the daughters of the infernal rivers. So that's an interesting distinction, is that the nymphs of the underworld aren't the nymphs of the rivers, but the nymphs of the daughters of these rivers, which is like, because these rivers are important, they can't be lady nymphs. All right, ancient Greece, I see you.
No, they're goddesses.
They're goddesses. Well, maybe, yes. Well, for Minthe, we know Minthe. Minth, you say Minth. I'm gonna start doing that now.
Well, because it's mint, right?
Right. Actually, that's a good point, DJ. What is, so she is a noteworthy underworld nymph, and honestly, one of the few nymphs that gets a name in the grand scheme of nymphs, much like satyrs. They don't often get names. They are just there as an archetype, a class, but not really specific. Just since we're talking about nymphs, she is one who thought she was gonna hook up with Hades. And Persephone was like, hey, everybody, who wants some mint chocolate chip ice cream?
Exactly.
So, didn't go so well for her. But she is said to be the daughter of Kokatos, which is the river of wailing or lamentation.
Mm. Yeah, that's the one that Annabeth and Percy fell into.
Yeah, and it just bums them the fuck out.
Yeah.
So she's known as the daughter of this river, but this river doesn't have, like, looking at, like, literature and history, doesn't have, like, a personification. So she is not the... So she... I think she's the nymph of that river. This is my new take now. Fight me. Someone come fight me. Minthe is the nymph of the river Cocytus. Cocytus, whatever.
No, she's not a river nymph.
What is she? She's an underworld nymph.
She's an underworld nymph.
Yeah.
So she's not a river nymph. I bet Cocytus does have a personification. But we also know that, like, technically, Tartarus doesn't really have a personification either. He just shows up projecting himself, right? And then in Lore Olympus, spoilers, but I think it's in the standard now.
Yeah.
Persephone gives him a physical form, right? Brings him out, and he eats Cronos. So
good. This is not what this episode is about, but holy shit, is it so good.
It's very strong.
Years in the making. Years in the making. Absolutely flawless. Pulled off. I believe it.
Gotta love it.
Would recommend.
But it's like, yeah, Tartarus doesn't really have a physical form, right? Technically, neither does Gaia.
True. Here's the thing. So you're proposing that if it is a river, even if it's a river of the underworld, see, it would have to be a river nymph.
Well, yeah.
I don't think so, because the rivers of the underworld aren't traditional rivers.
Yeah, but we know that, like, in there is a very at the
is a river of fire. This is where we get our one fire nymph.
Yeah, right. There's the river Phlegethon. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that there are rivers in the real world that were supposed to correspond to rivers of the underworld.
We are going to have to revisit the underworld at some point in time and do a real proper underworld episode.
Because yeah, we'll do it in House of Hades.
I think we'll
probably... When they visit Tartarus.
You know they go to the underworld in the next book, right? I think we're going back to the underworld.
All right.
Going back in time. So...
It'll be a three-parter, y'all.
So the point I'm trying to make is Hecate and Persephone hung out with nymphs, and they were underworld nymphs, and they had torches, and that's just an aesthetic, and I think I just want to be an underworld nymph now. I don't need the responsibility of being a full-on goddess. I don't need people, like, relying on me heavily, but I just want to vibe with my friends in spooky shit. Happy October, everybody.
Yeah.
There's also another classification of nymph that I think is just very useful to us and just dissecting general, like, storytelling as a whole, especially in this one. Because, hey, remember when we were like, oh yeah, Calypso's a nymph.
I don't remember that, but
well, I think you originally said, well, wouldn't she be a goddess? She's the daughter of a Titan.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily, because there seems to be no consistency on whether or not the child of a Titan is going to be a Olympian god, a Titan, or a nymph.
Who's depowering nymphs now, Darian?
How is this? No, this is just me letting you know. Why does Kronos and Rhea's out as Olympian
you
gods?
Just said that nymphs were goddesses at the
yes.
start of this episode.
Yes.
And now when you said, well, she's not necessarily a goddess, she's a nymph.
Yes, because again, while they are goddesses, this is a different class. You would not say, oh, like fucking Hera or Artemis, there's no question.
Yeah.
Calypso rolls up and we're like, oh, she's a goddess, but she's a nymph.
Ridiculous. She doesn't got pointed ears.
Different. Is that? you think you're just operating?
She's not tied to, I don't know, plant, star, whatever the fuck.
Why could she just be the nymph of Ogygia? That's actually the point I'm trying to make. Wait, let me go back. Okay, so the point I'm trying to make is,
can there be island nymphs? Nymphs of islands?
You'd think. I think they're more, because they're nymphs of mountains.
I know. There's nymphs of mountains. There's nymphs of stars. There's nymphs of rivers and
like
lakes
oceans.
And bigger natural phenomena. Why isn't there a nymph of an island?
So, okay. So then, so when you, they're just nymphs.
Also, why would she be the, like, it seems weird to trap a nymph on her own property. I guess it's house arrest, but it's like.
Well, because she can't be the nymph of a GGS. She can go away from there.
Yeah, I guess.
It actually makes the most sense if you're going to do it.
But it's like, she goes away from it in the books.
Yeah. So here's, okay, so here's the thing I'm trying to point out is there's the nymphi, just nymph. And they are just no specific class. So literally, one of the examples is Calypso,
mm-hmm.
who's like the daughter of Atlas, as we know. There's some daughters of Helios. And there's, once again, back at Trials of Apollo, Britomarius. I think she was the net one, yeah?
What?
The net, the goddess of nets.
The only goddess of nets I'm thinking of is in Magnus Chase.
Yeah, no, she's in Trials of Apollo. Oh, God, I just... Yes, I'm right. She is the one from Trials of Apollo who rolls with Artemis and is like the goddess of hunting and fishing nets.
I think I remember.
Britomartis. So is she...
Oh, yeah. Her.
In Greek mythology, she's like said to be like a daughter of Zeus, but I think in the books, they actually note that she's like... predates that. It was like a proto-goddess of a earlier culture who transformed. Which is very interesting, and I'm delighted that we're getting a little bit more of that.
Yeah, we get that with in Tyrant's Tomb next with the God of Silence.
Yeah, it's really interesting. That's super cool, and that just adds, like, so it's just in terms of, like, world-building and telling the story, just so much more flavor to play with.
Yeah.
But the point being, she's a nymph, but she's a goddess, but she's actually classified as a nymph. So that's interesting. The early Greek poets simply described nymphs as like, oh, beautiful women and stuff. Okay, describe a nymph for me. What does Juniper look like? Just how you picture, not even necessarily like,
no, that's fair. Yeah. When I was like, oh yeah, Juniper, a tree nymph, I suppose, skin like a juniper tree.
Mm-hmm.
Hair like the leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's about it, right?
Yeah, that's pretty standard for like any kind of nymph. They're going to have elements of
and the their pointed ears. So I was just memeing with the fucking Lore Olympus
shit.
I got
shit,
you.
But,
no, yeah.
I got you. But yeah, so the anyway, just to go back to the thing. So earliest poets were like, hey, they just look like super pretty young women. And later poets and painters were like, yeah, but what if they were super pretty young women and also had like...
Look like they're fucking trees.
Look like cool, like... fucking fashion colors for their hair and like leaves and shit and like water. Wouldn't that be cool? And the answer is yes. Yes, that is cool. Yes,
that is
awesome.
Much cooler.
It's much cooler. I always want things to have some sort of primordial influence in their appearance when that's the vibe.
Yeah.
Everything should have more of that shit. It's just good.
Hey, do you think Backbiter in the series is going to look like Damascus Steel? With normal ass steel and celestial bronze. Damascus steel is a marvel. Have you seen Damascus steel? Do you know what I
don't,
what? Okay.
No, I don't know what it is. I don't know what's happening right now.
Sorry. It comes back to when we were first in the podcast, I brought up the fact that anytime I thought of Backbiter, I thought it was like a marbling blade of the two. And I found out when I was watching Forge and Fire, I found out that that's an actual style of blade. Mm-hmm. It comes by like laying a lot of blades and folding it over and shit like
okay.
that.
Okay, so yes. I think I it comes through what
and
talking.
Looks like a marble.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it should definitely look
it
like that.
It should look like that.
It should absolutely
and it's,
look like
because
that.
Because it's like when I actually read the book and realized the description, it's split down the middle. Mm-hmm. If you use the wrong side on a human or like a normal person, it's just going to hit the flat of the flat part, and you're like, that's not going to hurt anybody.
I like the idea of they folded it together, and now it looks like it's totally
it's a nice
combined.
Marble, and it looks really cool.
That's really good.
Sorry, that's
it.
All.
So, even in mythology, you still had nymphs, and their primary role was useful. Nymphs are handmaidens to almost every goddess, not just the torchbearers, but I find the underworld torchbearers to be very interesting. Circe and Calypso both had nymphs, handmaidens on their islands. The Pleiades constellation we mentioned is a nymph. Some nymphs are a little bit more, let's say, prestigious. For example, Maia was a nymph who was the mother of Hermes. Harmonis is the mother of the Amazons via Ares.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very cool. Dionysus, not to be outdone, Dionysus also had nymph companions of his own. The we've discussed the Maenads or the Bacchae, the ones that just offs Orpheus because he was bringing the mood down. Just the frenzied wild companions, the wine moms on ecstasy.
Wild.
Sorry, wine ants on ecstasy wild. Are these nymphs. That's barely all I got. We could go on, but that's nymphs. That's
yeah.
Nymphs. And we've got what I think has become kind of an archetype framework that we do see in a lot of stuff and usually looks very similar.
Yeah, a lot of times it seems like over the years that the nymph aesthetic got melded into the fae and fairy aesthetic.
Yes, yeah, big time. I think you often see.
And so it's like a lot of nature went into like the fae and like, mm-hmm. Shit like that, as well as like trickster shit of the satyrs mm-hmm. and just like a bunch of that shit just got like morphed into Arthurian fae.
Well, okay, because fae are like Celtic. So yeah, fae but existed. It's like, And became part of a culture outside of this. But I would say, I would say they've definitely been blended.
Yeah.
As these two were introduced and have been incorporated.
That's why I said Arthurian Fae, right? Not Celtic Fae.
I don't think there's a difference, DJ.
I mean, there's a little bit of a difference, right? Given the fact that Arthurian's not fucking Celtic.
You may be able to argue that the earliest, proto-Arthur stories were Celtic.
Yeah, but it didn't stay Celtic, right? Like, Cuchulainn, that's fucking Celtic.
Okay.
Cleodna, the Banshee, that's fucking Celtic. Arthur, King Arthur,
right,
King,
okay,
like,
yeah, when the
Merlin
French
the Wizard.
Up and started writing self-inserts those about Lancelot.
Aren't, those aren't Celtic.
No, the earliest, okay.
Those
the,
are now Arthurian lore.
The earliest proto-Arthur story is about a king going into fucking fairyland to save people who have been, his citizens who have been kidnapped. That's Arthur.
Yeah.
And it's definitely like, evolved. It we got turned, a lot of stuff from the French.
That's like saying, oh man, Roman stories, that's Greek. They didn't stay Greek.
Okay, I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. Point being.
They might have derived from it, but they didn't stay it, right? That's the thing.
I think the biggest difference, if you're doing nymph or you're doing fae, is that nymph are very distinctly of this world.
Yeah.
They don't come from other places. They are of this. It's the nature.
They don't come from the fae wilds.
They don't come from this other fairy world. They don't come from somewhere else. They are of Earth. And I think that speaks back to this distancing between the culture we exist in and nature, and how it's easy to combine nymph and fae as other when nature has become other.
Yeah.
When fae were inherently other because they weren't even of, like, oh, watch out for that grove, but the fairies don't live in that grove. They just play in that grove. They will spirit you away to fairyland or something else. So watch out. Or that is a gateway or the fairy rings and things like that. But nymphs aren't going to take you anywhere else, or dryads, or even the star ones. Like, everything is of this world still. And I think that's an interesting distinction when it's like, is it a nymph or is it a fae?
Yeah.
Kind of of circling back to her conversation about like nymphs are just very largely usually ladies. You don't see a lot. There are notable exceptions. Not often, but the biggest one is the Chronicles of Narnia. Yeah, DJ. So dryads are one of the numerous creatures you see in Narnia. And Lewis described them in great detail because Obby.
I don't know Obby. I don't know C.S. Lewis's writing style, so.
We'll just circle back. So you've got birch dryads who look like slender girls dressed in silver. And beach dryads look like, you know, gracious and queenly goddesses dressed in fresh, transparent green. And then there are oak dryads, which are notable because not only do they look old and wizened, but they also look like old men with warts and gnarled fingers and hair growing out of their warts.
Hell yeah.
Because they look like oak trees.
Yeah.
But that's the most notable thing is that the well, specifically dryads of the Chronicles of Narnia is one of the few very strong examples where you see dude nymphs going about.
I think I would have to place my favorite dryad in modern pop culture would be the dryad from Terraria.
Oh, tell me more.
I just like her. She's great.
She's great.
Yeah, like, I don't know. She's just fun. She's, for those of you who know what I'm talking about, I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? But Darian doesn't. But she's just fun. She's
cute. Yeah.
She tells you how, like, what levels of your world are what, right? Given that, like, you know, you got different, three different types of, like, biome. Mm-hmm. Like, or, like, biome to really worry about. You got the corrupting type, which is either corruption or crimson. You got the, essentially, the Feylands of the Hollowed. And then you got just standard overworld. And she tells you, like, what percentage of your world is what. And there are achievements for getting it to certain percentages of each time.
So you would say she is useful.
Oh, yeah. She's fun. But, like, that's not her only point. She's, you know, she's just an NPC in this game. She sells shit to you like all other NPCs. They're just, you know, they're just useful.
Yeah, she's an NPC. She's useful.
They had a crossover event some time ago with this game called Dungeon Defenders where you... She crossed over like it's like, oh man, people accidentally went through portals that like happened to be like to these other worlds. So you got the tavern keep from Dungeon Defenders who gives you the materials to be able to start wave-based event, much like how Dungeon Defenders games is, right? A wave-based event from enemies coming at you. And so then you can start that in Terraria. And if for Dungeon Defenders, the dryad crossed over, and then she then got both the power of her normal self and the corruption to be able to use different abilities from the two while fending off the waves of this area. It was really cool.
That's really cool. I think, hearing you talk about it, are nymphs just usually NPCs?
Yeah, why not?
I'm sure there are stories in which the nymph is the protagonist, but goodness me, I can't think of any.
No, I can't think of much either.
So not only just useful, they're usually not telling. Even I'm thinking like the nymphs I cited, like the myths and stuff, like rarely would you say they're the main character.
Yeah.
And you've got to, yeah, and they're usually just there to be the handmaiden, the assistant, the temptress, the prize, the mother of the hero.
Yeah.
But never the hero. The story's never about them.
Yeah.
Like to write a story where the nymph of some sort, star nymph, definitely star nymph.
That'd have to be a star nymph.
Have to be a star nymph.
Just solely because of the fact that they can go anywhere.
That's right? A useful one. That's useful. They only come out at night?
I mean, no, I don't think they only come out at night. We saw Zoe Nightshade moving about. We saw...
Well, she's not a star nymph.
That's fair.
Oh, she is a star nymph. You're right.
Yeah.
I don't know why I just said she wasn't. She is.
So it's like...
Notably.
I don't imagine that it's like... It might be visibility, but it might like specifically be nighttime visibility, right? Daytime might not matter too much, so maybe nymphs can move around. But at nighttime, if they're not at a place that they can see their star, they either drain power or just super weak.
Interesting. That's interesting. I like that a lot.
So yeah. you can play with that if you want to do that, right? You can play with that if like she's in like a desert or like a forest area at night. And it doesn't matter if there are clouds. It's specifically light pollution would have to be the case.
Yeah, it's the light pollution. Like, not, like, clouds is like, whatever. My star is, like, still
there. It's still there. But it's like, if she's...
I'm not a fucking werewolf.
If she goes to, like, New York City, right?
It's a problem.
It's a problem. She can't fucking do anything about it.
Interesting. I do like that. Yeah. Also, gotta have a fire nymph. Obviously. Gotta throw an underworld nymph.
Nymph of Phlegethon.
Nymph of Phlegethon. And and her other underworld nymph girlfriend who works for Hecate. Yeah, here we go. What is this about? I don't know. I just have characters. But yeah, no. Who wants to write a nymph story with me? Hit me up.
Here you go.
But yeah, that's really the nymphs. I think that my biggest thing I just wanted to be like, hey, these are goddesses. I think we should treat them as such. Not like we have to or it's bad that we're not, but like, damn, wouldn't it be interesting?
It would be interesting.
Just give us a little bit more.
I think some of them don't hold themselves as goddesses though, right?
Yeah, I think it's the ones just the only ones that do
are in fact the seven I don't remember their whatever.
The Silver Wives.
Yeah, the seven Silver Wives in Burning Maze. They're the only ones who hold themselves as goddesses because they got the fucking power to be goddesses.
They're like the first. Yeah, no.
They were like the first seven nymphs, weren't they?
Yeah, I think that's the bit. I didn't dive into them because we're just doing Battle of Labyrinth, but like, yeah, I really wish I had because it's like, what is this? It's so interesting. There's so much. So this was really a Trials of Apollo episode, DJ.
Well, I mean, that's. Happy birthday. It was the most prominent nymphs in the series, right?
Yeah.
Especially in Burning Maze, that's what the whole thing had to revolve around was the burning of a lot of nymphs.
That is nymphs. That's what it is. It's great.
Yeah.
I want to write a story about a nymph because I don't have a favorite nymph. I mean, I like Mint in
I like her now. Daphne's pretty great too.
I think she maybe does have some other. Oh, you're right. Daphne's my favorite. Who the fuck am I kidding? It's obviously, I just like the last couple ones we got with, but no, it's obviously Daphne. Daphne's my favorite. Like,
Daphne's great as fuck.
Daphne's the best. She's just, oh, good for you, girl. She never said, I can fix him. She said, get your act together.
Was like, I'm not going to fucking do this shit. I'm not going to deal with your fucking shit. I was dealing with Apollo for goddamn who knows how long, all
right? Too long. Any long is too long.
Yeah.
It's our birthday month.
That it is.
You may have known. I don't know. Have we mentioned it yet?
Possibly.
But the next thing you will see on this feed is going to be another unlocked Patreon episode. This time, we are giving you a Remyth episode.
Yeah, very excited about it. And again, if you guys like it, which, I mean, we like it.
We like it a lot.
Please go to our Patreon. We'd love to see you there.
Yeah, check it out more. I'm not saying
get access to our Discord too.
You can talk to us whenever you want.
Yes.
Also, more importantly, you can talk to our other cool patrons.
Yes, they're very cool.
And that's honestly the reason you should join is to get to talk to, I don't know, Tim O'Connor, the Crystal Con Man. Can I shout out Charlie? Can I shout out Robert? I did.
There you go.
Yep, our other cool friends who get to hang out there. But yeah, that is it. Or if you want to, if you're not up for the monthly thing, we get it. Not everyone is, but you want to celebrate birthday stuff and get a little piece of Muse of Mythology.
Yeah.
I don't know if we mentioned this. We do have merch.
We do have merch now. It's actually on our website. We got a couple of stickers.
Yeah.
We love them a lot. We have the one of our cover art designed by Audrey Miller. And then we have the other one. It's a Don't Be Like Zeus one designed by...
by Becca Rupert.
I didn't remember her name.
She's very talented, and Merrily heard me describing this concept for this sticker idea I wanted to put together and was like, hold up, and then just gave me like three different designs from picked from it. It is very cool just seeing
it. Three different designs, but one of them was just better than the other.
It was perfect is what it was. But yeah, it's this is not something we would have been able to do when we first launched the podcast.
Yeah.
It's not something that would have felt real, but here we are 2 years later, and it feels real. So real and that we have real life merch that can exist in the wild.
And again, it's all thanks to you guys and our patrons. And yeah. Like, again, we'd love to see you guys over there on the Patreon.
Yeah.
Not solely because money, but like also we like doing what we do.
We do like
doing it. We'd want to do it more.
We do. And it is fun. I guess, I don't know. Let's be a little self-indulgent. Year three. I want to go weekly too. Not a promise.
It's something that we'd like to do, but it's hard because we still have a lot of shit that we got
to
do.
Right? Love to be in a position where we can comfortably go weekly and drop these episodes weekly. And honest to God, maybe get through some books. Can we go hang out with Magnus?
No, fuck. We'd love dude. To We're go hang close, out with Magnus. But this book itself is going to be almost a year long.
They are, but even that's okay too, because seeing how much things grow and change over years is pretty rad. But that's my goal. By the time we turn three, I'd love to be in a position where we can go weekly. And
yeah.
we can get, and with the support of our listeners, our patrons, like, I think we can get there.
Yes. Thank you guys so much for listening.
Awesome. We will be back. Well, we'll actually be back in your ears next week with that Unlocked Remyth episode, but
I know.
We will be back with a traditional episode on Tuesday, October 25th, talking about ghosts, because we're nothing if not perfectly timely.
Yep. Thank you guys for joining us.
And until next time, don't be like Zeus.
Don't be like Zeus.
Muse of Mythology is created and hosted by Darren and DJ Smart. It's edited by Darren Smart. The show is produced by Darren and DJ Smart, as well as
Tim O'Connor, the Crystal Con Man. Our music is Athens Festival by Martin Hain. And our cover art is by Audrey Miller. You can find her on Instagram at bombshellnutshellart.
Want more Muses of Mythology? Support the show on Patreon. Just $1 gets you exclusive bonus content. Get more at patreon.com/musesofmythology.
You can also support the show by leaving a review at lovethepodcast.com/musesofmythology. Or tell a friend why you love the show.
Don't forget to check out all of our episodes and episode transcripts at musesofmythology.com.
Thanks for listening.